I like beer. I want beer. So now we have Hantverksbira at Örebro Fest. Örebro Fest is a beer festival in, of course, the city of Örebro in Sweden. And we have got a brewer from Brauhaus Bevog in, it's called Bevog?
Bevog, yeah. It's actually a made-up word.
Okay.
With us, there's a little bit of a funny situation. So the owner from our brewery is actually Slovenian. And he lives, like, the town where he lived was right on the border between Slovenia and Austria.
Yeah.
And when he did decide to open up the brewery, he was really struggling to sort of get all the paperwork together.
Of course.
Slovenian bureaucracy is, how do I put this?
It's like Sweden.
Is it? Yeah. I always imagined that in Sweden things would be like...
No, not when it comes to alcohol. Then it's a disaster.
No, it was like... There were like some laws, and when he was checking, of course, he had to sort out the financing and everything. So when you've got everything ready to go, and then you see you need some documents that would take 2 years to procure to start the brewery, you know, you want to start right fucking now, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Sorry about the...
it's okay.
Because I lived in Australia, and fuck is just like another word.
An average word, yeah.
But I'll try to keep it, to tone it down, yeah.
That's
what he did, living so close to the border, he was just like, you know, let's see the laws in Austria, if maybe it's easier. And 4 or 5 months later, the brewery was already standing.
Up and running, yeah.
And so the whole thing with Bevog then, what to do? Are you gonna use a Slovenian name? And then all of the Austrians would be like, haha, look at those guys. Come to Austria, open a brewery, and they don't use a German word. And it would be the same if we used... a German word, then, because officially we're Slovenian, every guy from Slovenia will be like, ah, look at those sellouts, yeah, they don't want to be in touch with Slovenia anymore. Vasya, our owner, he figured the best thing to do was to make a word up. So it's Bevog.
Okay.
And that basically means that you can say it like Bevog, 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 whatever. There's not a right or wrong way to say it, but we normally go Bevog. Between ourselves, so you said it.
Okay, great.
There I am bullshitting for 3 minutes now.
Yeah, but that's great. So, Leon, it's nice to meet you, and you're here, and you are working with the Swedish importer Beardier.
Yeah.
So, and we have some contact with them as well. They have been here, and we have talked to them and tried some of the beers, and we tried your black IPA recently.
Yeah.
And now we have the hazy one, and that's what's the black IPA called?
So this one is called Mountain Gorilla.
Mountain Gorilla.
And the one that you're having is Proboscis Monkey. Why the animals, you might ask?
Yeah, why the animals? Because you don't have the animal as your logo.
No. The thing is, when we were figuring out what to do with, you know, with many breweries, we like to play around a bit, we like to experiment, we like to try new stuff. So there is always like this. Need for a limited range, and we thought really hard. We used to have like a line that was called "Who Cares for Beer," basically.
I had that in my research here.
Yeah, it's basically just like it's just beer, you know. Yeah. We're just playing around. Who cares if you like it or not? Yeah. Here it is. But then we sort of had the feeling that it was getting a little bit worn out, a little bit tired. So we were on the lookout on what to do, and our brewery is very environmentally conscious. So we buy our electricity from renewable sources, which makes it a little bit more expensive. We were basically the first brewery in the wider region to go into cans, which are environmentally a little bit more friendly, which does bring its drawbacks as well, which I will maybe explain a little bit later on.
Yeah.
There's like also other stuff. We're going, we're building a solar, the plan is to build a solar plant on the roof, which will basically... power the whole brewery during the summer. We've got a CO2 capturing machine getting installed just these days. So like the CO2 coming out from fermentation, we'll be able to capture that, clean it, and then we won't have to basically buy any outside CO2. We're just gonna use the one that's
created. That's perfect.
And that being said, so environmentalism for us, it was always important. It's like, is this one planet we all share, you know? And it's the only planet with beer, so let's maybe keep it in a good state. So Vasya came up with that idea. Every limited beer that we release, we're gonna try and raise awareness. So every beer that we brew in this Extinction is Forever line,
yeah,
we dedicate it to a different animal that's endangered, so facing extinction. And we went a little bit further even. So what we then do is we make a beer. We choose an animal. So in this case, it was the mountain gorilla and the proboscis monkey. And we only brew it once. It doesn't matter if it's the best beer in the world, and it doesn't matter if people are like crazy crying for it to come back. It's like once it's gone forever. And we're trying to symbolize
the extinction
of the species. Exactly. So like, even if you like the animal, like once we fucked up too much and it's gone, you won't be able to get it back. Yeah. And we don't advertise this that too much, but okay, now that we're talking about it, I'll tell you, but it's basically 5% from everything that we make from the Extinction series just goes into a separate bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's like a decent sum of money, mm-hmm, we just choose like an environmental organization, and then we donate this money. So by purchasing Extinction beers, you are also doing your small share of doing something.
But is it in Austria or Slovenia, or winning worldwide?
Worldwide, yeah. It's like, for us, it's we just look at the sales, you know, look how much we made.
Yeah.
5% just goes in there. But it's like, we don't want to advertise it, because I know it's like, hey, everybody, you know, look at me, I'm giving money away. It's if anyone asks, we tell about
it.
But it feels, when you talk about it, like it's sort of shaping your DNA of the company.
Yeah.
That you're environmental interested and that you want to preserve the planet. And then that sort of come natural, that you want to give back to the nature that you actually use to produce the beer that you sell.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Yeah, that's the whole of the idea. So I think it works very well with us, and we want to keep on going with that. So yeah.
But do you see yourself like a Austrian brewery or like a Slovenian? Because in Sweden, according to our store Systembolaget, you are an Austrian brewery.
We're definitely an Austrian brewery.
Okay.
We're based in Austria.
No,
I'll try and put my phone on silent. Sorry about that. We tried in Slovenia, and then we would be a Slovenian brewery. We are Slovenian owned. There's no secret in that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, no, we're Austrian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an Austrian brewery.
Yeah. Great. You have a slogan: beer bring us all together. Was it a formal one, or?
It's not a formal one, but. I know that you must have seen the introduction video.
On YouTube.
Yeah, just last year we basically celebrated 10 years of our existence.
10 years, you're quite long for a craft brewery.
Going strong.
Yeah, you're going strong. I mean, especially in that region as well.
We've been doing quite a lot of vacation in Austria.
Oh, really? You've never been to Beowulf?
I didn't wasn't realized you existed.
It's never too late. And
I mean, on the next trip, we will.
On your next trip, I will be very disappointed if you don't come.
Because we used to go both in winter and summertime.
For skiing and stuff like that. Huh?
Also some hiking. And this summer, we were in visiting Sillital Beer, and we were at Stiegel.
Of course, yes.
And it was really interesting visits, both of them. But Beowulf, you're located in the south of Austria, so it's not so near where we.
It's a little bit of a drive. If you really wanted to say it in a stupid way, it's in the middle of nowhere. But what we like to think it's when you come to us, it's like very, very peaceful nature. It's a really cool place to be. Just kick back, have a beer. It's worth a detour. And when people come, they are normally like very surprised, like, oh my God, because it's two guidelines with our brewery, which we have always sort of stuck to, have been drinkability. Mm-hmm. Would have to be the first one.
Yeah.
So I know about the modern trends and the modern styles, and you've got We've got all sorts of crazy stuff going on now with pastry stouts and pastry sours and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, those beers are delicious. Mm-hmm. But our aim has sort of always been like, you shouldn't have a problem with drinking it and then asking for anyone. So that's probably why we haven't, and probably why we won't venture into this area. Even though from my perspective, it would sometimes be easier because I mean, exports, so for me, it's also very good to sell, but yeah. And the other aim for our brewery that we always had was quality, and basically like no shortcuts whatsoever. So the best equipment that we can get, we're going to use the best ingredients. When we make like fruited beers, we don't do any bullshit with those little artificial like flavors.
Syrup or something.
No, yeah. never. There's like a, don't kill me, I don't know the name, but it's probably the best fruit puree provider mm-hmm. from France, where we get our fruits.
Yeah.
It's expensive, but it's like, we don't want to go like halfway. Like if we're making a premium product and we're charging a premium price, we really think that we really have to do everything in our power to do the best ingredients, do it on the best equipment. So that's Vasya. Okay, now it doesn't happen that much anymore because we did gain some knowledge, but in mm-hmm. the start it was like notorious and there were like people talking about it like this crazy Slovenian man, but if there is something even a little bit off, it just goes into the drain. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay. So it just tosses it, and that obviously does cost money.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter any. It doesn't happen anymore. Okay, if something would be off, we would never sell it. But now, like our brewers are really becoming more and more experienced. Obviously, after brewing for 10, 11 years, you gain some knowledge, and like mistakes don't happen. But still, we run so many tests. We've got like this, you remember from COVID era where we had to do PCR tests. So we do PCR testing on our beers. And it's like all sorts of crazy equipment. So it's not very common in a small brewery. When anyone comes, first of all, they have to drive to buttfuck nowhere. And then they come and this place and everyone's just like, wow, you know, guys. Yeah.
But you have like your own tap room or restaurant?
It's not like in Sweden, so we don't officially need a restaurant.
Okay.
We are considering also adding some food options because obviously people that can have a bite to eat then obviously can also drink a little bit more. So it is an idea for us that maybe we want to sort of pursue.
Yeah.
But as it said, we've got some bar snacks. But there's a tap room.
Okay.
But you say in the middle of nowhere. So it's just a brewery there, or there's a sort of a part of a village, or can I go there and stay over at the hotel?
There are like hotels. So it's actually the town is called Bad Radkersburg, and it's a thermal town. So there's like a lot of spas, a lot of hotels.
Okay.
So it's also a wine region close by. So there are tourists, but it's not like coming to Stockholm, for example, or Vienna or whatever.
But there's still like a community around.
There is a community.
So that means that you can take a trip, you can go there, you can visit the brewery, and you can stay over.
There's some nice places to see and nice hotels. Mm-hmm. So of course.
We still have like three core ranges of beers, in that commercials, or do you have you left that?
We try not to label things too much, but roughly speaking, I would say that we divide beers into three ranges. So the first one is the core range, and that's what we brew year round.
Yep.
You've got your hazy IPA, you've got the pale ale, which is our best seller, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that brings in the money.
Yep.
You've got an IPA. We do a very good Helles beer, which we unfortunately don't export in kegs because going back to the quality aspect of it, Vasya insists it can only be served in stainless steel kegs. And that poses a little bit of a logistical issue.
Because if you return on those.
So no key kegs on that beer. But until you come visit us, you have to take my word for it. But it's good. So we've got an oatmeal stout. So those are the core beers. And then I would say the second.
And you sort of bring, you brew them on regular canvas.
Yeah, always.
Have sort of those available.
Those are always available. We don't like to brew too much. There are more capacities, obviously, we can brew way more. But with us, it's sort of always optimizing what we make. Because, you know, we want the customer to get the freshest beer possible. So why would you make too much? And then someone comes or orders the beer and you give them like 3-4 month old beer. It's just, you know.
You get there for a reason to get fresh beer.
Exactly.
And visit the brewery and see the location and all that stuff.
And also exporting, you know, it's like, I don't know, like some exotic places, but we've exported beer to Hong Kong and to Thailand, for example. So you can't send 4 month here, 4 month old beer there, you know.
No.
It has to be like just as fresh as you can get. So we try to keep it rotating and not to brew on reserve too much. It's also quality speaking, and it sometimes does bother our importers and distributors in different countries, but paying so much attention to quality and really doing everything that we can to just make like the best possible product. We have a temperature controlled storage as well. It's a cold storeroom. So in the hot months, we normally start like in May and all the way till the end of September. We ask, we demand that all of the deliveries are made with a cold chain transport. Obviously that costs a little bit more money. But it's a, why would you bother and really try that hard and then put it on an ordinary truck, which will get stuck in traffic with fucking 45 degrees.
Ruined everything.
So all of our efforts are ruined.
So that sort of also includes like exporting to Sweden as well. Like a complete cold chain all the way.
During the summer months. It's always going to be chill.
A question there, because when we talk to brewers and bars and so on in Austria, they say like 90-95% of all the beers are like Märzen. You haven't talked a word about Märzen yet.
we don't have it in our production at the moment. It might be that it was brewed in the past. I would have to check. I don't want to say that we never did it. I'm not sure. Austria, like Germany, is a very traditional nation. It's also a little bit hard, like what I said earlier. We were one of the first guys to go with cans.
That's not German. Refund bottles.
Just bottle. And they just, even though cans have certain advantages that we're not going to go into detail, everyone knows, people see them as inferior in both Slovenia and Austria and also Germany. So they will always, 9 times out of 10, they will go for the bottle if possible. So I don't know.
Is that a sort of perception about quality or tradition, or what do you think?
I think because of the tradition, it sort of has like a can is for like, you know, cheaper non-quality beer. You know, it's like anything but industrial. That's what the majority of people see it as. So I'm not excluding that maybe bottles at some point will come back. We still use bottles for our barrel aged beers, of course, and we drifted off from the initial question.
Yeah, but we'll get back to it.
the barrel aged beers and the strong beers we always bottle, and it might potentially, it's not out of the question, that maybe just for restaurants as well. If you go into a fine dining restaurant, you know, a can simply doesn't look that appealing on the table.
No.
So you never know. It could happen that we will maybe at least partially also do both cans and bottles. We'll see.
We started to see like Belgian ales also in cans, like Delirium and they are coming. But
I would say it depends on the country, you know. For example, I spoke to our Holland importer, and he was just like, oh mate, no, definitely not. It has to be canned. It must be canned. But then in Austria, which are our biggest markets, it's bottles.
Yeah.
Also, Italy is very important for us. and they are also more aiming towards bottles. Yeah. So that's the reason.
Yeah, I mean, the Italian guys, they have like the very characteristic bottles.
Yeah, yeah,
the long neck and so on.
And like the 66 centiliter ones and stuff like that. So
I think if you look at, for example, Sweden as an example, so if you look back before the craft beer revolution came here, everything was bottles. Everything was cans. I mean,
it was.
Except some exceptions, but there's a lot of cans, and that sort of got you sort of got an impression that that's cheaper beer, simpler beer, or whatever. I mean, I don't judge anything.
No.
I think that was an impression, and then the craft brewers came with bottles.
Yeah.
And no one really knew that that's because it's more cheap and easier to actually handle from the craft beer perspective.
Yeah.
But then it became sort of a standard.
Oh, yeah.
High quality beer is coming in bottles.
Ah, so it was just like different.
Yes. So that was sort of the marketing trend, that signal quality in the end product. And I think a lot of people sort of bought into that because it was different. You got a much better beer, it came in a bottle. And of course,
being craft made, no shortcuts, no. Yeah, of course.
But now we're seeing the trend going back. So more of the craft beer breweries is also going over to cans again,
of course,
because of environmental things, quality wise, etc., etc.
You also have to look at transportation costs and everything.
So
quality is so much heavier with bottles, you know.
Yeah. So now we're sort of seeing the pendulum swing back a little bit. But I think it's more accepted now because people have sort of appreciated the product more and sort of didn't associate it with just this packaging.
Yeah.
And I can totally agree with you that the bottle has more branding capabilities and more packaging capabilities.
That's the main idea. I think the product is going to be the same in both can or bottle. I think it doesn't affect. I could be wrong. I'm not a professional in the field, but from what I had, like if you have a good bottling machine or a good canning machine, both are going to be able to package the product to be able to withstand the shelf life. So it's basically like you said, just the marketing aspect of it.
Yeah.
But of course, cans are infinitely recyclable, easier to transport. They don't break. So.
But if we go back to the craft beer market in like in Austria, because I mean, there are some like in Sweden, a few very, very large breweries, of course.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reach out to the customers, except this little nowhere place where you're located? I mean, is it like, do you have to educate the beer drinkers to attract them? Or
I would say not anymore. So the owner being Slovenian, our biggest market actually is Slovenia still.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it is. And even though we only have like 2 million people, but they took us as their own. So that's why sometimes, like when we're in Slovenia, the organizers of some events also call us like a Slovenian brewery. but yeah, that would be our first market. And I gotta say, it was, I'm gonna focus a little bit now on the Slovenian part being the main market for us. But back in the day when we started, I don't know about Sweden, but I can imagine.
Just rise up the microphone a little bit.
Oh, I do apologize. Yes,
perfect.
Yeah. That's I don't know the situation in Sweden, but like there's breweries that have been around for ages. Like, so I think craft beer was present in Sweden more than it was in Slovenia or Austria. So the first months, the starts were obviously hard. I wasn't at a company then. But from what I talked with our guys, it was basically just driving from door to door and just trying to sort of convince them to buy this beer. And then, of course, trying to explain why it's double the price of the macro lagers and the stuff that they normally buy.
Yeah.
So it was a struggle. There was one other craft brewery in Slovenia at the time, if I'm not mistaken. But with that one, together we were sort of starting the whole revolution. And in the start, it wasn't very easy. But then a little bit by little bit, things became easier for us. It was actually this whole situation that I explained earlier, being a Slovenian guy opening in Austria. So there was some journalist that dug up this story.
Mm-hmm.
And he made like an article or some TV piece or whatever. And all of a sudden it went boom. So Slovenian people were like outraged, you know. See, our stupid government, they could be paying taxes in Slovenia, but now they moved to Austria. And of course, this was very good advertising for us as well. Like a Slovenian man who had to go to Austria because of our bureaucracy, which takes too long. Everyone can relate because everyone has some paperwork to do. And it was very good advertising for us. But I would say like the biggest boom and the biggest rise for a brewery, it was actually in... I think it was in 2014, where Raid Beer rated us as the third best brewery in the world. Third best new brewery in the world. Okay.
Oh, so I don't, amazing.
It's a very good achievement. Yeah.
Of course.
And Vasya told me that when he got this email, he was like, what's this? Some bullshit scam. so he didn't even take it seriously. But then all of a sudden, like emails from Nick Keller and other brewers, just like, congratulations, very good job, good work. And that put us on the map a little bit. And that's where proper exports started for us.
Yeah.
And with us, we always knew that if we want to achieve a little bit something bigger, thrive on a slightly bigger scale, do what we really want, we will have to export because Slovenia and Austria, they are not crazy big markets. And then being traditional as well. So, that's when the biggest exporting boom happened. It was also the best years, the best worries to have. Like, we were just brewing beer and it was basically sold out. You would have to.
All the time.
For the first 2 years, I think it was sold out most of the time. Basically, would have to decide, okay, sorry, mate, I know you ordered 10 kegs, but I will just give you 4 and you will get 4 more next time and stuff like that.
But did you like scale up then, or did you?
We had to expand like very, very soon. Yeah, so we built a new cellar room with bigger capacities, and that's when the whole cold storage thing came into place. And,
But if you talk about like the acceptance of like craft beer in Slovenia, do you think so? Slovenian beer tradition, is that not as conservative as compared to Austria and Germany? Are people more
I'd still say it's not too different. I'd still say it's a little bit the same, because the market has been and still sort of is dominated by two breweries. The one was based in Ljubljana, another was based in Laško. They both got bought by Heineken now, obviously, but still. So those were basically the most of the beer that people knew.
Yeah.
You could probably get some Guinness or Kilkenny even before that, but it was not a lot of people looking for those beers. So mostly it was like macro lager breweries.
Yeah. But you said that there was not that many to choose from. There was still like a smaller amount of breweries.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that sort of be one of the reasons why people were more interested in to try out new things? Because you talk about 2014 here, when you sort of boomed in that region.
Yeah.
That's quite early. If you compare to Germany and Austria, they still like are in the booming phase sort of regions.
Yeah,
they're much more traditional, and because there's also much more local breweries and local of beer course. Tradition in these countries. Do you think Slovenia had a different position from that?
No, I would say it would be the same. Like, even in Slovenia, there's still like a certain share of people that are never going to be able to adapt to this. Like, I've got, especially like, because I see here in Sweden at this festival as well, you've got all sorts of generations. But, I mean, of course, it happens that, but normally, like, older people are a little bit more traditional. So, they will probably never adapt to craft beer, not even pale ale or IPA. Then God forbid you give them some sour beer. It's never going to happen.
Because one thing that we sort of observed here is that when we get the craft beer revolution here started in maybe 2005, 2006.
Yeah, it was earlier,
What you had available, and since we have a restricted alcohol policy here with Systembolaget, what you can get from Systembolaget back then was quite limited amount of lager beers.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much the same big international brands. You got some ales potentially from Britain and some German stuff, but it was not that many different brands to choose from.
Yeah.
So when the craft beer revolution came here,
people were excited.
It exploded because you have so much more new things to try out compared to what you had in the past. And there was no, like, well, there was sort of tradition, but there was no like local tradition that was very hard tied into the genes of the people that live there. So I think people here, at least, were quite open to experimentation and accepting new influences. And that's why you can see everything from, stouts, Pilsner stouts,
everything
sour
coming
beers, IPAs, double APAs, everything. I mean, everything is available, and people are accepting all these different kinds of things.
I would still say, like, especially the younger generations, they were accepting. I think the hard part was convincing the bars to bring the beers, to make them available. For us, initially, we could only keg beers, so that was a major handicap. But as soon as we started bottling, it sort of picked up. Because, like you said, people were excited about these new beers. They found out that it's not just this Lashko and Union, which are used to be, still are, the biggest Lithuanian brewers. So, it went uphill from there.
But how is it there at the pubs and bars in Slovenia and Austria? Is it? I mean, in Sweden, a lot of the bars and pub have a contract with the big industrial breweries, so they are not allowed to take the craft breweries on tap. Okay,
obviously,
they have to take on cans or bottles.
Obviously, some bars, it's hard. I don't really want to spread any mistruths here because primarily I'm in exports, which basically means everything but Slovenia and Austria.
Yeah,
true. So don't kill me if I do something say something wrong.
We promise.
I think there might be some bars that have those kind of contracts, but there's also a very good share of craft beer oriented bars, and I we haven't had too many problems. So.
Because I think it was in Sweden or it's in Gothenburg, over 90% has this contracts
where they can't basically serve anything else, huh?
Exactly. Only on bottle and can, bottle and can is never the volume.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not too experienced in this field, but one of my good friends basically used to own a bar, and he had this contract with one of the major distributors. We distribute our beers in Slovenia ourselves, so we were out of the picture there.
Yeah,
and this distributor basically was like, "Okay, man, so here you go. Here's the coffee machine, rent free, and here's the tap machine, rent free." But you have to only buy coffee from us and you have to buy all the beer from us. So in some situations, it could be that they give you I don't know, if it's a bigger bar, they give you maybe 5-6 taps and they say, okay, this one can be for guest beers, but the rest have to be ours. But in majority of the time, they ask that nothing can be connected to their tap machine. So we did our share in, so we bought a lot of Linders and a lot of tap machines and stuff like that. So we just give them rent free to a bar. We just say, okay, you have to buy this much this frequently and you get to use the machine. So then,
but they can end that whenever they want.
No harm done. They have to reach certain volumes for us, because being quality oriented, it's you never know what's happening with the beer. So same goes as with the transport, as with everything else. So our the guy that does distribution for us, so he visits bars, I would like to say every week, maybe every 10 days. He goes to every bar with our draft beer and he cleans the lines. So obviously, if it's someone that only buys 2 kegs every month, the cleaning costs and his travel costs are more than we make from a beer. So there are some minimal quantities that they have to maintain. And with that being made, it's like he can just do it on one of the deliveries. He delivers, he cleans. We're happy, they're happy, everyone is happy.
Is that part of the sort of the contract that you have people that go out and make sure that the lines are clean? Mm-hmm. So you can actually sort of preserve the quality from the brewery all the way out to the consumer?
Yeah, it's like really try on all the fields possible. It's a pain in the ass if you have someone this is I don't know, oxidized, or it's a tired beer, or it was heat struck or whatever. So we're really doing everything in our power to bring it to the customer who's paying a good price to get our beer, to get also a good beer.
That's always a challenge, especially in export markets, I guess, when you set it out.
Yeah.
I mean, and even if the importer has trying to push the beer quickly onto the bars. I mean, they might end up there in some queue or some stash, and it might be there in 4 months.
Yeah.
even in like a refrigerated area. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a well hopped beer that is like
it has to be drunk fresh, yeah. Just fresh. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, there are, we control what we can, yeah. But obviously, it can happen. Of course, yeah. So we can't. We when choosing distributors, we sort of try and focus on ones that are really quality oriented as well, that share our vision and our values. Hmm. But there is only so much that you can do. You yeah. know, it's I can't know for sure what's yeah. happening. So yeah, we have to
trust. I think, for example, what we have seen in our hometown, Gothenburg, is that some breweries are starting up their homebrew pubs.
Mm-hmm.
And one way is to get past all those contracts, you can actually serve your beer on your own,
mm-hmm.
Like conditions, but also it's a way to control the complete chain to the end consumer to make sure that what they receive is actually what you intended.
Exactly for them right. to receive. Yeah.
And then you can also pitch the brand in a good way. So that means that you can position and brand the product
of course.
In a way and want to like produce the feelings they want to pitch with the beer.
And that's
so it's not just the flavor and the beer, it's also like the idea around the brand and what you talked initially about this environmental focus and all those things.
Yeah,
I mean that's the narrative and the story mm-hmm. for your brand. I think is quite important to bring along with mm-hmm. the beer because it raises awareness and connects yeah. feelings.
Yeah,
to the product.
For us, it's okay. There's like a little QR code on every can, on every extinction can. So if you mm-hmm. scan that, it takes you to a section of our web page, so where you can read more. I don't know how many people do that, but. Mm-hmm. We are, yeah, that's the aim. And ensuring that everything is up to standard, it's, of course, locally, it's not hard. I mean, it's easier to do it locally than globally, of course, yeah. But yeah.
So now we sort of took a long detour. I think we started out with the different kinds of...
I got here trying to explain our ranges.
Yeah. So yeah. We're on the core, like the core beer.
I think we're done with the core now. Yeah.
So about the second one.
Okay, so roughly dividing.
Should have brought more beer in here.
Yeah, I'm starting to regret. But yeah.
The festival is closed for an hour, so we can't get anymore.
Yeah, you guys don't have a camera, but they brought small glasses. So, I brought a big one.
Yeah. One more professional.
I had this gut feeling that something like this would happen.
It's too bad. Yeah, but you have some other
ranges. So yeah, the other range would be basically a limited edition range.
Mm-hmm.
So a part of this limited duration range is basically beers that we brew seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got like a very nice fruited sour, but it's for us, it's like it's a proper lip smacker, you know, like a very refreshing, thirst quenching beer.
Yeah.
But it's just not one of those beers that you would enjoy in January, you know.
No.
So it's a part of the limited range. So we only brew it in the summer and the spring. And like when we do collabs, we also put them obviously in the limited range. And the major part of the limited range is also the Extinction is Forever range, so mm-hmm. the animal one.
Yeah.
Then the third are air quotes most premium range is our barrel aged range. And this is like something for people that are a little bit more knowledgeable, for people that know what they're looking for, some people that really know stuff about beer. So like the name suggests, barrel age program.
Yeah.
I would say that the beer that made us, that put us on the map and most of the beer drinkers know us for would have to be Hager. So we're serving that on our second session of the festival as well.
We haven't had it yet.
I have to say it's a different Hager than Gotthard's Famous though. So Hager is a barley wine. And we use bourbon barrels, mostly bourbon barrels to age it.
Mm-hmm.
What we're serving at the festival today is basically the same beer, but it's aged in Porto wine barrels. But you can get like Hager in Systembolaget. This year it came in, and that's the bourbon, like the most known version. There are obviously other beers. There's some very interesting stuff coming up in the next few months. We've got a beer coming just like in a week or two. We call it Horta. It's a barley wine which was aged in whiskey barrels and we sourced the whiskey barrels from a local distillery in Austria. It's about 45 minutes away with the car from our brewery. So what made it cool was basically they emptied the whiskey away from the barrels. We picked them up, and the very next day, we already put the beer in there, so it was just like as fresh as you can imagine. And let me tell you that it's a big beer. I think it's weighing at around 15%, but not in an unpleasant way. We basically wouldn't use it if we thought it was too aggressive. Mm-hmm. Even with 15%, it's very easy to drink. It's a bad idea, but you can drink more than just one. We also try and incorporate like local ingredients. Yeah, so there was like a local distillery, and there's a chocolate factory not too far from Graz called Zoper. And
not far from
Graz.
Yeah, I've been there.
You've been there, yeah. We use their organic coconut.
Yeah, okay.
So it has a touch of chocolate as well. That beer,
okay.
And we also. I'm really looking forward to that beer. Yeah.
Yeah. You have something else in available in Sweden. Is it like an Imp Stout with raspberry or something?
That's the other one that we released this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that one is also a part. Obviously, it's not barrel aged, so it's not a part of the barrel aged line. It goes into the limited edition line.
Yeah.
But it's like one of those very thick bodied bad boys. I don't know if people listening to this know about brewing. It was, I don't know, so many plateaus. We had to do such a thick body.
Yeah.
Because once you put raspberries in there, it dilutes the beer.
Yeah, yeah.
So with raspberries, we finished at about, I think, 28 plateau. So before that, I think it was like well over 30. A very rich, very creamy. 9 different malts were used. So it's a very complex body, like very chocolatey, very rich. And then you got this slight acidity coming from the raspberries, which really does balance out the sweetness. And for me, it was like, maybe this is like, you know, chocolate raspberry cake, like very delish. So
I can imagine I'm a bit sourness from the raspberries.
Yeah, there's a little bit of acidity.
It is all those, like the complexity.
Normally, exactly
when you get like those heavy Imp Stouts, they are complex, but they're also very heavy.
Exactly,
and
right.
Get something, some freshening into freshness, it, like citrus or raspberry or anything.
And it brings us back to drinkability.
Yeah.
So,
It raises the freshness and makes it more.
You'll be able to see for yourself in a little bit. Yeah.
You're balancing the beer in a good way.
Because
we're taking it from, I mean, you need those like the thick base in order to get there
of course.
But normally you need to lighten up a little bit to make it more pleasant.
And raspberries do just that, yeah. So
I think that's probably still available in Sweden. And I mean, if we...
I'm not sure, but it might be.
We looked up it on the way here. So it was available still. But if you like buy a couple of them and save one or two for a couple of years, how do you think it will evolve during the years?
So basically it's a beer that can be aged to some degree. It's like we have a best before date on barrel aged beers. They do develop some notes. They normally tend to mellow down a little bit with age. So with the barrel aged program, we've got the best before date, which is 5 years from the day of being bottled. You could potentially age it for longer than that, but we advise like 5 years. With this one, I think it's 2 years that we advise. Nothing should go wrong with the beer, but that's what we sort of specified. Yeah. But it's interesting to see because we had like a small portion of Huggers, one of the better rated and better accepted Huggers, the barley wine that I spoke about earlier, are from 2019. It was one of the most successful ones. So we still saved a couple of bottles in our warehouse just to age them. And every once in a while, we go and open one up. And it's very interesting to see how it changes the beer. But
Before we end up here,
we had the third segment also.
Third one.
Oh, no. I think we did it.
We did it.
Core range, limited range, and barrel age range.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just missed the transition. Yeah, because I sort of spoke so long about the core range, you were expecting the limited range to go for 1 hour as well.
We had one collab with a local Slovenian rock band or rock artist.
Yeah.
Siddhartha or something.
Siddhartha. Yes.
And I think you had both like beers and merchandise and so on, and yeah, really cool printed ones. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was. Check them out, you know. It's,
yeah, I actually did yesterday.
Yeah, it's
of course I didn't understand the word because it was in Slovenia.
Yeah, but they're major in Slovenia. They're like we spoke with your mate about bands, so
yeah,
it's the equivalent. Of course, they're not. I mean, there are still people outside of Slovenia obviously listening to them, but like in Slovenia, they're like one of the biggest rock bands. Okay. And basically, at the beginning of the year, they reached out to us. Mm-hmm. And they're basically just like, you know, they've been around for ages, I believe, like 25 years, maybe a little bit more. And like when they were really booming and they made like this groundbreaking album 20 years ago, they had like never seen before a concert on old football field. So like the arena and everything, like the field was sold out, and it was like one of the best concerts. So now they're releasing a new album and they wanted to do something special because it's the 20th anniversary of that concert. And so the guys are not just good musicians, they also have very good taste in beer. So they were like, yeah guys, you know, we're major fans of your beers, and would you potentially be interested in doing some thing together? And of course, like we established earlier, it's not very uncommon for, I like to say that brewing is also a little bit creativity, maybe also, dare I say, artistic sort of thing to do. So we are normally very also into music. So of course when Siddhartha calls, it's a big deal, especially in our main market Slovenia. And we were like, yeah, for sure guys. So they came, and then we tasted like so many beers, of course, and then we just decided to go like for a really nice refreshing lager, which we made especially for them. And yeah, it came out a few weeks ago, and it's been selling very sweetly. So that's the whole collaboration.
Yeah.
Actually, tonight is that concert. That's why our owner couldn't join us. He had to fly home because obviously he has to be there tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But from what he told me, he did enjoy Sweden so much, and we're of course looking forward to coming here again.
So great, Leon from Brauhaus Bevog. Really nice to meet you and to get like stealing. We thought about 30 minutes, now it's up to 50 minutes, I think.
I just keep on blabbering about. Sorry, guys.
It's just funny. So, and you are still operating then with Beer Deer in Sweden, and hopefully we will see a bit more of your beers in Sweden.
Let's hope so, guys. So thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for the chat.
And when you think beer, think Bevog.
Think Bevog.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Cheers.